This is Notably Texan, and we'd like to thank you so much for listening. I'm host Matt Minky. And today it is my pleasure to bring you an in-studio discussion with a Texas singer and songwriter whose music we have helped to propagate thanks to these last couple of albums that he's released. And this is a man who's putting his own spin on the kind of alt-country and Americana genres. And though music has been somewhat of a side project for him over these past couple of years, it is moving into the forefront of his life. And we're proud to have played a part in getting his music into people's ears. My guest in the KETR studios is Lynn Crossett. Man, it is very nice to connect with you face-to-face, Lynn. Welcome to Notably Texan.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We've caught you adjacent to a performance in Dallas during this recording, but you're based, I believe, between Austin and San Antonio, right?
I am, yeah. The little college town of San Marcos, Texas, where Texas State University is, just south of Austin.
That's a pretty good position to be in because, I mean, you can zip right back and forth between a couple of major Texas cities for gigs and whatnot.
It is, and there's such a singer-songwriter kind of original music scene in that area, you know, especially like right there in between Austin and San Antonio and San Marcos and New Braunfels.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that a lot of artists, I mean, Austin, everybody always thinks of Austin as being the music hotbed, and it is, but it is... It's a little bit packed, oversaturated almost, if you will. So yeah. you almost need to be somewhere adjacent, but not necessarily in Austin, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, for one, for affordability purposes, you know, and two, a lot of the clubs that were around when I first moved to Austin many, many, many years ago that played more of original folk singer-songwriter kind of music, you know, are gone. There aren't as many of those. There are plenty of other kinds of music venues, you know, in Austin. And some of the, you know, wonderful ones have survived there, but a lot of them are gone. But there are things that are kind of similar to that that are in, you know, San Antonio, that are in San Marcos, and starting up in New Braunfels as well. And so I've really been playing more in those things than in Austin for a while now.
Well, tell me a little bit about your backstory. Are you a native Texan?
Well, we moved here when I was 7 years old, so I don't know if that counts.
you know.
I was actually born in Arkansas,
okay,
in Little Rock, but we packed up and moved to Texas a long time ago when I was 7 years old, and I've lived in Texas ever since, yeah.
I mean, has it always been in that area? Or
no, we moved to southeast Texas first, the Port Arthur, Beaumont area, the Golden Triangle, and actually I have a song on this new record about that. First time I wrote a song about my hometown, and actually I might play that song. So we moved there, and I, you know, grew up there, graduated from high school there, and then hightailed it to Austin. And I've lived in Austin, in or around Austin, off and on pretty much ever since. Had a little stint out in Lubbock for a few years, then we came back to Austin.
So did you have any formal music training as a kid, or were you more of a casual music fan?
A casual music fan, no formal music training at all. I wasn't even in band.
Really? Okay. I mean, was it even something that you dreamed about a little bit?
Or? Oh, yeah. No, I was one of those kids, like so many kids, I think, you know, watching Elvis Presley, you know, as a small child, you know, and playing with my toy guitar and, you know, pretending to perform. And then as a teenager, the music that I was into, music of the 80s, that's sort of the alternative kind of 80s music, of like REM and Psychedelic Furs and 10,000 Maniacs and such. That's really kind of what first made me start seriously thinking about becoming a musician and a songwriter.
Nice. Well, yeah, I love that diverse, you know, background in the music. I mean, what other kind of stuff did you love to listen to growing up? I mean, this is some of the stuff that I love, too, that you're mentioning.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, as a small child, it was probably more like kind of country music and rock. You know, like really hard rock, like AC/DC and stuff. Yeah. When I was like a junior high. But then by high school, I was just too cool for rock anymore, and I really was into the, you know, the stuff that didn't get played on the radio that you'd find that only got played on like college radio stations at that time, and just loved it. I mean, I was just drawn to that kind of music, and I would sort of fantasize about becoming the next Michael Stipe of REM. And I thought, man, if I could just actually learn how to play an instrument, I need to start there.
Just missing that one piece, right. You know. Well, you know, even some of these big stars didn't even play instruments. Some of them were just singers or songwriters, yeah, yeah, too. But yeah, that was a heyday for truly alternative music, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a great time to be a music fan. I can definitely understand.
Yeah.
So you later went to college in Austin studying mm-hmm. law, I think, right?
Yeah. Well, undergrad, I actually got a business degree. I was very practical about it because we were very, very poor. single mom raising four kids, you know, on our own. And it was just a really almost kind of a huge surprise and miracle to me that I got to go to the University of Texas.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, I would love to study history or philosophy or something, you know, something I was really interested in. But I thought, I got to study something where I can get a job. As soon as I get out of school, I have to start making money. I need to help my family. So I actually got a degree in accounting, and I worked in that for as long as I could, which was like about a year and a half. went to Houston, worked at a company there for a little while, and I just couldn't do it. And so I went to law school from there. Because again, following the practical, but then I started thinking, well, I could kind of join the two of practical. I can actually have a salary, but I can do good work. I can do something that, you know, that serves the public interest. And so that took me to law school.
Interesting. So, I mean, Austin is obviously an inspiring place for musicians. So I think it was during college there that you maybe started taking music a little more seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. That's when I learned how to play guitar. I was probably 19, 20 years old before I ever, you know, played a song. And again, no training. My music lessons were from my college roommate who had this old piece of junk Sears guitar that was one of those, you know, old guitars where the action was terrible. These steel strings that are, you know, half inch off of the neck where it just makes your fingers want to bleed to press them down. And then, you know, can you just show me like the few chords that I need to play, you know, these songs? And so he drew out a little diagram and showed me, you know, put your fingers here and here and here. And, you know, if you learn these five or six chords, you can play a, you know, ton of songs. And he went off to Mexico for a couple of weeks or so, one of our breaks. And I practiced and practiced and practiced. And I was doing them exactly as it showed on the thing. And it sounded just terrible. I thought, I know, that pretty sure the guitar is in tune. And when he came back, I showed him how, like, look, I learned E and G and A. And they all just sounded awful. And he turned the sheet around and said, you learned them all upside down.
Oh, no.
So I relearned them. And then I was off to the races. Okay. learning songs.
Great story, man. Well, San Marcos-based Lynn Crossett is my guest today on Notably Texan. Now, we first discovered you a few years ago on your album In the Company of a Song, I should say, which that was actually far from your first music release, but now your latest record, Autumn to August, is just coming out. And with all these songs out there, I think some people might be surprised to learn that that music has only been one side of your life, but you've kind of touched on this with the studying in college that mm-hmm. you were doing. Tell me about your day job in San Marcos.
Yeah, so now I'm a professor at Texas State University. I work in the political science department there. We have a master's program in legal studies, and I've been teaching in that program and actually directing that program for quite a few years.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I hope I haven't offended you by not calling you doctor then.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, Dr. Lynn is fine.
Okay.
on my self-help radio show.
Yeah, right. Wow, that's pretty fascinating, man. You know, I mean, we don't tend to associate the law profession with being a musician and a songwriter. Did you kind of personally find maybe an alignment between the two? Or
you know, I did, at least in terms of it being healthy, because law school was very stressful. The practice of law was, of course, even more stressful. And I found that when I would come home the day when I was just, you know, at the end of a day that really had me worked up, if I picked up my guitar and just played, it was so healthy. Whether I was playing my own original songs or just banging out some Neil Young song, and it was like, okay, now I feel so much better. So I think it was a really healthy outlet, both in terms of just stress release, but also in terms of keeping the creative juices flowing too, because, you know, not that there isn't creativity in the law, but it is certainly a highly structured kind of thing. You don't write lawsuits or briefs that like novels or anything like, ooh, I wonder if the judge is going to figure out the ending, you know? And so writing songs throughout my, you know, adult life, I think has helped to keep me maybe mentally more healthy.
I get it. I can totally understand that. That's got to be a nice backup to be able to go home to. it's just really interesting to me that you've been leading these kind of two separate lives between being a, you know, law professor and a touring indie Americana songwriter. But you're now transitioning away from the teacher life, I think, to focus on music exclusively?
Yeah, so this is something I've been working toward for a long time. You know, I've always just, you know, played music at home or with friends or, you know, going to music festivals, or going to Kerrville or Old Settlers Music Festival, one of those places, and, you know, sitting around the campfire and we swap songs and, you know, doing things like that. But as far as becoming like a working, performing songwriter, you know, that wasn't as much of a priority in younger life when I had a full-time job and, you know, and then a family. And but I always like dreamed about it, like, God, I just want to, you know, we always went out to see live music. From the time our son, you know, was a baby, we would take him to shows, and so we were always, you know, going out to see live music. And I would do the daydreaming, thinking about, like, you know, because I have all these like original songs that I'd written, and you don't, even though I wasn't really one who wanted to be the center of attention, but you know, you don't write these songs so that no one will ever hear them. You think, I want to be the guy up there on the stage someday. And I just kept kind of working toward that. And I would do a little, you know, little show at a barbecue joint here or there. But I was working toward getting to the point where I could actually like professionally record an album, do the things that you have to do to actually get quality gigs and get songs played on the radio. And it took me a while. And yeah, so I've been working toward that for a while. And I'm trying to transition from this the full-time professor gig to becoming a full-time touring musician.
And this is literally happening like this year, right?
It is, yeah. So I went to my last ever graduation ceremony for the spring here last month, and then I'm finishing out just the rest of this year. The summer, I'm teaching over the summer, and I'm teaching in the fall, and then at the end of December, I am out.
Wow.
I'm heading the road.
Well, congratulations, man.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's a really bold career change, man. I mean, was there a moment where you realized, okay, this is it. This is the time to do this? I mean,
yeah, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I mean, honestly, if I could have done it 10 years ago, but if it, you know, the timing wasn't right. And you know, now it, you know, our son is grown. He's out of college now. You know, the timing is such that I can do it. And I've taught long enough in a public university to qualify for the teacher's retirement system. I'm going to use my little teacher's pension to subsidize my thriving folk music career,
okay,
which I know is going to make me tens and tens of dollars.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, I would say that this is a unique story. Chances are you know Texas singer-songwriter Terry Cline.
I do, yeah.
Because he had a similar story, mm-hmm, where he walked away from a law practice and became a singer-songwriter.
He did, and he had the guts to do it at a younger age, like an earlier stage in his career. You know, I've done this. I've been teaching. By the time I leave, it will have been 25 years.
Wow.
I don't think he had the 25-year law beat down.
Yeah.
Because he didn't teach. He practiced it, which is, frankly, even harder. It's much harder.
Yeah.
I think he was in Massachusetts, right in Boston, working for a firm there and gave it up and became a full-time musician, moved down here to Austin, and it's impressive.
It's amazing.
And he's done very well. He is a, you know, a legitimate touring musician.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad to know that you are familiar, because you have a, you know, similar, not exactly the same, but mm-hmm, it's just fascinating to me. How many people are leaving law to become singer-songwriters? I never...
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing thing. In Austin, I can't tell you how many people I met who were either lawyers who were, you know, just musicians on the side. They didn't really do it, you know, or try to do it professionally. Or others who got a law degree and then just never did anything with it and became, you know, musicians. But musicians with the law degrees.
Who knows? I mean, they're...
Yeah, they register their own copyright, I guess.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm with Lynn Crossett here on 88.9 KETR. Your latest record is Autumn to August, and I see that you once again worked with the highly prolific producer extraordinaire Lloyd Maines. I mean, this guy, would any record get produced if he wasn't in the business, I wonder?
I know, no kidding. When it, you know, I knew he had had a hand in so much of the music that I listened to. I didn't realize exactly how much until I started researching ahead of doing that first record with him. Like, oh, wow, no, he did that one too. Like,
yeah,
like 5,000 different projects that he has had a hand in, you know, played on or produced, and some of some very iconic, you know, records.
Yes.
And then mine.
Oh, come on now. So obviously you two, you know, hopefully have a good rapport. I assume you enjoy working with them.
I do. It's just been wonderful. I mean, it was really a kind of a life-changing thing for him to, because I just reached out to him cold for that first record. And he responded. I mean, I've been blown off by way lesser people than Lloyd for just getting a gig at a barbecue joint or something, right? And I sent him an email, and because I had a feeling, you know, from what I'd seen of the way he carries himself, he seems like a nice guy. And I know he has worked with independent artists and, you know, wants to help people kind of get their start. And so I sent him an email, and, you know, a day or two later, he responded, apologizing for taking so long to respond.
Wow.
And he had actually clicked on the links that I sent him, listened to songs, and, you know, because he commented on some, oh, yeah, what was that place where you were playing and such and thing. And, you know, but yeah, let's set up a time to talk about your, you know, your project. And we hit it off great. The guy is just a barrel of laughs. So even though, like, recording can be really tense and, you know, kind of scary, he helps to put you at ease because he keeps you in stitches the whole time.
Really?
Yeah, he is just full of personality.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've gotten the impression that he's a little bit shy as far as being in the spotlight.
Although he'll get in the spotlight to tell his jokes.
Okay.
he'll work those into shows. But yeah, as far as like wanting to be the guy out front, I guess he is happy to be the magician behind the
yeah behind the all scenes. This work, and I think he's only ever put out one album of his own.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
You obviously had some good returns on the first album where you were working with him. That had to have been, you know, motivational for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's what I kind of changed my life and helped me to do this transition that I've been working toward. Was, you know, instead of being sort of completely unknown person who's putting out a record and trying to become, you know, transition to being a full-time musician, at least I was a completely unknown person with a record produced by Lloyd Bates. And just, you know, that did open some doors that would not have opened otherwise, just by name dropping, you know, Lloyd Maines. And then also just seeing, you know, what it was like to work with him and what, how those songs could create, even though he's not an overbearing producer in any way, he really just adds his wonderful touch to it. But to see what my little solo acoustic songs would sound like because he's a multi-instrumentalist, so we'd have to hire all these musicians. So, you know, I think some people that I knew, you know, thought that I spent a whole lot of money making that first record. I really didn't, you know, because he just played everything himself. Most of that record was just me and Lloyd, and then one other musician, Dennis Ludeker, who's just an amazing fiddle player and mandolin player, and Chris Gage, a piano player, singer-songwriter from Austin, you know, legendary guy from Austin as well, played piano in one song. But otherwise, that whole record is just pretty much me and Lloyd.
Wow.
But he played bass, and he added a little percussion, and then he played dobro on one song or steel guitar on another, and it just filled out the whole record and helped me to do it at a fraction of what it would cost, really, I think, to have anybody to produce a record.
For some people, music is just kind of something that's on in the background to sort of break the silence. For other people, it carries deep weight and purpose. Now, you obviously create your own songs, but, you know, as a music listener, what meaning does music hold in your life?
Yeah, I'd say I'd fall in the category of a very active listener, not just in having music in the background. So much so that whenever I don't listen to as much of other people's music maybe as I would like to, because when I do, it's a concentrated, I like to really like just be kind of doing that, not to just, you know, let Spotify or something stream in the background. I mean, it's great. I love listening to the radio driving down the road, and but otherwise I like to actively listen, and that I can't really fall asleep to music because I'm listening to the lyrics and I get it's like I'm getting engrossed in a, you know, in a TV show or movie or something, and it's not something where I just, you know, I'm just hearing the melody in the background.
And I mean, music is such a powerful tool too, because I mean, it can help you through good times and bad. You know, sometimes it can let you know that, hey, somebody else feels the way I do or experienced something like I did.
Absolutely. And I was reading a biography of John Prine not too long ago, and in an interview in that book, he was talking about how he was kind of taken aback by the response that a lot of his music had early on, because he wrote these very specific songs. And he thought that he was because he didn't know what he was doing, like, because no one else was writing it like he was, you know, with these very, very specific references. And he thought he just wasn't developed enough to do the other stuff that other people were doing. But it turned out people really responded to that because, yeah, they could identify with those experiences as well.
Well, you know, thanks for doing what you do, because, you know, honestly, as cliche as the saying is, in times like these, we really do need music to help us through the highs and the lows. And it is such a great escape and just a way to, you know, get us through these lives of ours. So thanks for doing what you're doing, man.
You're absolutely welcome. Absolutely welcome. And thanks for, you know, doing what you're doing. If it wasn't for, honestly, public radio, playing my songs on the radio, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now.
Well, it's our pleasure. Now, I've noticed you've got many songs that mention California on your record. So what's your connection to the Golden State?
Yeah, so my road manager wife, who's in the studio but doesn't want to be on mic, actually lives in California. And so a handful of years ago, we kind of did this kind of a lifestyle change. Our son lives out there, and we knew that, you know, I wasn't going to be doing the gig at Texas State University forever, that, you know, the plan was to transition out of that. And so I've been going back and forth to the Los Angeles area for several years now. And so I've been trying to develop some of the similar things there that I've been able to do in Central Texas as well, to become a part of the kind of the singer-songwriter folk community in that area. So I'll try to line up gigs and when I'm heading out there, and I go back and forth a lot. So I'm, which, you know, creates the impression that I'm already a touring musician. Some people, and I don't dispel anybody when they think that, you know, it's like, great. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm on the road again, out to California. But I line up shows and do as many shows that when I'm out there as I can. And then I'm going to start spending a lot more time out there, but I'm still going to keep roots right there in Central Texas as well.
Well, you mentioned it a second ago, but let's discuss public radio for a little bit while I've got you here. This has, of course, become a topic of conversation lately on a national level. Can I trust that you've been a listener to non-commercial stations in places that you've lived?
I've been a huge fan of public radio my entire adult life, and then especially now as a performing musician and someone who's putting out, you know, music, recorded music that they would like to have played on the radio, because people like me are not going to get played on commercial radio unless something else, you know, I get a big record deal or something, but I don't get to just reach out to commercial radio and say, hey, I put out this new album. Hey, would you like me to come on your show? Talk to you about the gig I have coming up. But public radio made all the difference in the world with that first record. I mean, it actually got some Americana charting success because stations like yours played it. NPR public radio stations, like this one, the one for the Panhandle Plains. There was one in Virginia where there was these wonderful radio DJs picked up the songs and started, because I sent it to them, you know, and they actually listened and played the songs, and it really made all the difference in the world. And that's how I was able to get kind of better quality gigs and not feel completely delusional about the fact that I could become a full-time touring musician.
Why do you believe that public radio is worthy of people's financial support?
Because it really is, you know, that sort of community type of radio that's supported by the public. They are stations that are representative of the areas that they serve. And commercial radio, is from my limited knowledge of the radio business, you know, it seems like that programming comes, it's centralized. Right, they try to make it sound like it's embedded in the community, but in most cases, it's just not. Not that there aren't well-meaning DJs who work for those stations, but they just don't have the same kind of, you know, control that people can have in publicly supported, you know, radio stations.
Well, I appreciate your comments on that, and especially in light of you know, changes in the way public radio stations may be funded here over the next several years. We hope that we'll get your support when you go to our site, ketr.org, and click the donate button. Well, I saw that you were kind enough to bring your old friend, the acoustic guitar, with you. Tell me about the song that you'd like to perform for us in studio.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to play. This is actually the first song on the new record, on Autumn to August. It's called Something in Your Day, and this is a song about old friends. And I, instead of singling out a particular person and maybe making them uncomfortable, I just blended the stories of about five or six different people, including my own, and put that little tune together.
All right, let's take a listen to this now, a live performance by Lynn Crossett here in the KETR studios on Notably Texan.
You're acting kind of strange and I don't know why. Been drinking all day like it's 4th of July. I call your name and I call your bluff. You know you look funny when you're trying to be tough. Cause I knew you back when my sister made you cry. Your brother took a cheap shot, I was icing my eye. Guess we grew up faster than the other kids did. If that's what it means to drive your car in a ditch, then we were something. We were something in our day. Not quite something. Not quite something you leave unscathed. When we pulled into town, I was sleeping in the back, on top of our clothes, everything we could pack, into a 75 Ford without estate plates. Guess we'll be in a new school after holiday break. And that was something. And that was something in our day. Not quite something. Not quite something you leave unscathed. You welcomed me to town, picking a fight. We've carried on and off now most of our lives. And all the time I stayed away. Every time we talk, it's about the days. We'd climb from the roof to the fence to the yard, put it in neutral. Now I'll push the car far away from the window where folks are asleep and start up the engine, the end of the street. Off for something, off for something in our day. We were something, we were something in those days. You were something, you were something in your day.
That's called Something in Your Day, performed live in the KETR studios by our guest Lynn Crossett. And this is Notably Texan on 88.9 KETR. We can have a look at all your upcoming gigs on your website, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You go to lynncrossett.com. I've got all my shows listed there.
I've done it many times on the air, but I know you're accustomed to assisting people in spelling your name at this point, so help people find your website.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So it's Lynn, L-Y-N-N, and Crossett, C-R-O-S-S-E-T-T.
Perfect.
lynncrossett.com.
Yeah, I have definitely spelled it many times on the air, but no better than from the source, you know.
I appreciate that, because most people, you know, pronounce it or spell it a different way. So, yeah, I appreciate you doing that.
Well, Lynn, I got to tell you, I am so glad that we had this chance to speak face-to-face today. I thank you for coming way out of your way, I know, to visit with us here in person at KETR, because you weren't playing a gig, you know, just a couple of miles from here. You were playing over in Dallas. But thanks for coming out of the way and coming out here to meet me today.
No, I'm happy to do it. Your show, honestly, is a real treasure. I wish we had something like this in my area, the mix of Texas-related music that you play for 3 hours every single day. So I'm just honored to be a part of it.
Take care, my friend.
Oh, thanks. You too, Matt. It was great chatting with you.
If you'd like to find out more about this artist, his website is lynncrossett.com. And in case you missed the specifics on that earlier, it's LynnCrossett, lynncrossett.com. And a huge thanks again to Lynn for making a visit to the KETR studios. It was so cool to meet you. And if you'd like to find out more about us, we're online at KETR.org. And I'm Matt Minke, your host on Notably Texan. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, your support keeps this programming coming, so please click the donate button when you visit KETR.org.